I am pleased to have on the phone with me from Colorado Springs, Colorado, the very lovely Susan Wedgwood Gowdy. She is a master of social work. She is a psychological kinesiologist. We got to find out what that is. That just was a mouthful falling out of my mouth. She's also involved in NPR, and you know we've talked about this before, neurophysical reprogramming and bioenergetic synchronization techniques. She's written a book called The Journey from Fear to Love is Shorter Than You Think, because we talk about this often on this program. So many of us live in fear of everything. We're scared of our own shadow. And Susan is here to talk to us about how you can get from that journey of fear to love, and it's a shorter journey than you think. Thank you, Susan, for calling in and for joining us on the program. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm highly blessed and very well favored. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, let's talk about Susan Gowdy. Now, I know you grew up in Chicago, Illinois. Tell me what life was like in Chi-Town.
Well, it was growing up in a big city, so big city life. And I actually had the opportunity to go to a high school downtown, past downtown Chicago. I went to the same high school as Michelle Obama, Whitney Young. So it was quite the experience as a teenager, because I was, you know, taking transportation and 45 minutes to the high school, and I was in the theater program at the Magnet High School there, and it was a lot of fun. I grew up faster because I had to be pretty smart, street smart. So it was a lot of fun, though. I enjoyed it.
Okay, you said you had to grow up faster to be street smart. Why did you have to grow up faster to be street smart? I mean, you're a beautiful young lady, you know, all demure and all pure and everything. And you got to, because you got some street cred.
Well, because I was taking the L train and I was taking buses and transportation. And my father taught me to be smart, make sure I always looked like I knew where I was, even when I didn't. And that was a good way to make sure that I was confident, and I never had any issues. So in that way, that's what I mean by street smart. I had to, you know, be aware of my surroundings.
Mm-hmm. And which is very, very smart, because, you know, especially when people have, you have a certain look, and then the predators will think, oh, well, yeah, I could just take her down. And you're like, I don't think so.
I never walked with my head looking down. I always looked up, and friends of mine would get mugged frequently, but they were always walking, looking down at the ground. So,
because they weren't paying attention, your daddy told you. Now, are you an only child? Tell me about your family.
I have four brothers. I have a twin brother, and I have three older brothers. I'm the youngest.
And you're the only girl?
I'm the only girl.
So you had no choice but to get street cred, and, you know, you got brothers that, like, look, and it's a wonder that you even have children and a husband, because your brothers would be like, don't be looking at my sister. What's wrong with you?
That's exactly right. I was kind of the odd one out.
did they vet your boyfriends all the time?
they picked on me big time in front of boyfriends. They were the only ones that could tickle my knees and get me bouncing down the front stairs, and they did it in front of the boys just to make fun of me, and it worked.
Because you're like, these are my brothers, and if your brothers are going to do it, so now, and you know, what are you going to do? Because you can't, like, you there's no way you can, like, I'm excommunicating you. You are no longer my friend. Mom, can you talk to Susan? She tripping.
and bouncing down the front stairs again.
You bouncing her down there. She's a girl. Stop throwing your sister around. She's a girl. Do you realize?
That didn't stop them. They threw me around.
So they're like, oh, she got a big swirl on her. I don't know who we going to tell. Mama, look, Susan, what happened? I just was bounced down the stairs again. What brothers do, but it kind of toughens you up and gets you ready for the real world.
Yeah, my twin brother and I fought till he got bigger than me.
then you got to come up with strategic ways of getting back at him.
I bent the pinky finger back. Pinky finger or the thumb, that's what I always got a hold of.
See, you knew what to do. Like you said, your father taught you, be aware of your surroundings and know what it is, and that includes your brothers as well. Now, tell me about your journey into psychology and what made you want to go into such a field, because I don't know know that people wake up, you know, and especially being the only girl with four brothers and the youngest, and you go, you know, even though you got the credentials right there, because you're like, I know what crazy look like. I got four brothers. And I could tell you what testosterone will do. Because, see, I have a test. I invented the testosterone scraper. Having living with men most of my adult life, you know, I'm like, okay, let me get the test. Because they put it on thick like you have nothing in your head but pretty.
Exactly.
And you got to let them know, look, I'm just not a pretty, another pretty face in the crowd. Tell me what got you into that.
And what... Well, why I went into the field, I have a master's in social work, mm-hmm. and a minor in psychology, and I wrote the books for the same reasons. I had a trauma that occurred before I was 3 years old, and I think that's what led me down the path, because my whole life I was trying to figure out, you know, kind of, I had some quirks and some, you know, OCD type things, and wondering, like, where did this come from? Fears that mm-hmm. I didn't understand, and by the time I went to college, I decided, you know, I want to go into this field I wanted to help other people. Mm-hmm. But by the time I was 19, I realized really what I was doing was I was helping myself. Mm-hmm. And then I could help other people. But I was first helping myself. And when I was in college and taking social work and psychology classes, they had done a class on flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And the flashbacks brought up the memory from when I was very young. And I'd never forgotten it, but it just brought it to the surface again. And so I pursued that field, and I think it was personal as well as wanting to be professional and help other people.
Now, when you're talking about helping other people in the wake of helping yourself, now you're 19 years old, and this traumatic situation that happened to you, you were just a little bitty girl. You know, and I'm sure you didn't know what was happening to you or why, certainly not why it was happening to you. And had you suppressed it? Because you're so young, you know, I mean.
Well, it's interesting because I didn't suppress it as much as, you know, people would think and parents would think that a child that young, they'll forget about it, they'll grow up and they'll be okay. I was pretty outspoken, and that happened before I was three, and I was telling people when I was six what happened to me, and I was vocalizing and talking about it, and I never forgot it because my life had been threatened. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the trigger for me. I mean, I just never forgot it. It was kind of ingrained in my brain because it was a life-threatening situation.
Wait, the predator threatened your life?
Yes.
One of those, if you tell anybody, I kill you kind of things?
Yeah, exactly what he said to me, and I didn't know at that age what he meant when he said, if you tell anyone, I'll kill you, but his fist was in my face. Mm-hmm. And what I do know is that at that age, I did know that if you stepped on an ant and it was killed, that meant it never moved again, it was dead. I knew what that meant. Mm-hmm. So I knew he meant he was going to hurt me bad. And so I kept my mouth shut, I think, for other than talking to my family. My mom knew. But I kept my mouth shut, but I started vocalizing and telling friends, including his sister, when I was six. So, I mean, I didn't hold it back too much. And part of the reason I wrote the book, my mother, who's 83 now, felt that it was something very important to put out there because parents need to know that just because a child was young doesn't mean they're going to forget about it. And so I was lucky, I think, because at the time, there were no services outside of my home, my family, mm-hmm. to help me through this. I was allowed to talk about it whenever I wanted to. I was never told to shut up. But, you know, there's that fine line between helping your child and then turning them into a victim. Mm-hmm. And I never turned into a victim. That didn't happen. And that's why I think I took that path again when I got to 19. I started having back issues and a lot of pain, and I was only 19 and could barely walk a straight line down the street. I was just so uncomfortable and hurting and thought, what am I dying? What's wrong with me?
I remember reading in your book, you said that, you know, you're here, you are at 19 years old going through all of these back issues, and the doctor saying to you, Susan, you got the back of a 50-year-old woman. You haven't even hit 20 yet.
And I'll be 50 next year, and so, now I can tell you I feel 27.
Okay, so you see the difference. You see the difference.
There's a huge difference. So, I really felt horrible, and that started to uncover it. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to Arizona, I started working with a doctor that I use best, the bioenergetic synchronization technique. Mm-hmm. And my daughter was, at 21, I started working with him. At 24, 25, somewhere around there, when my daughter was 2.5, so about the age I was, I got sinus infection after sinus infection, just constantly sick and feeling horrible. And I went in to see the doc and said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Mm-hmm. And that was the day that all of that memory, everything came back. It all was brought up. I was given a word and a time frame, the age, the whole thing. And we cleared all that stuff out at the subconscious level, all the gunk and the garbage, the interference that was holding me back. And I can tell you, I never had another sinus infection in my life. I've never had another one.
Let's talk to people about what bioenergetic synchronization technique is to be able to clear out that junk, because so many people, especially in this day and age, are living in just abject fear. Fear of, am I going to have a job? Can I get a job? My relationship? What are my kids going to do? What about my health? What about my mom? What about my dad? Oh, got my car. And it's just constant fear. And people really don't know what to do. Talk to us about how this bioenergetic synchronization technique can help them.
Well, it's a hands-on healing technique. I would say it's similar to an acupressure type. They're holding points. Mm-hmm. It's very non-invasive. Mm-hmm. It's very gentle. And it works with the entire body, the emotional and the physical, which you can't have one without the other. I mean, if there's something physical going on, there will be an emotional tie underneath that. And so the practitioner goes in, and they're just facilitating, and they help the client to find what's in the subconscious that's blocking and interfering for this client to have the wonderful life that they deserve. And they clear that out very easily and give them a little bit of simple homework to do on their own to totally clear it out. And that way they can move on, and they unload that baggage they've been carrying for all those years. And that's, you know, what happened to me.
You know, when we're talking about carrying that baggage and holding on to that, and the fact that people end up living in so much fear, and sometimes that fear is unpacking that baggage. What's going to happen to me if I let go of this? What happens to me if I clear out these channels? What happens to me if I'm not holding on to this fear? How do you think people end up living in so much fear?
Well, I think it's because it's familiar and it's comfortable, and it's exactly what you were just saying. They have all those questions in their head. What am I going to do without this? It becomes it's a friend. It becomes a companion to them, and how do I let go of it? And for some people, it will take, you know, more time because they don't want to let go of it. They may turn their back on something like best initially, but when they realize that's the beauty of it, that physically they feel better, they'll go back because they want to physically feel better. Mm-hmm. But underneath all of that, they're getting the emotional care too. So they're releasing and they're feeling better all the way around. Some may not even notice that they're releasing that baggage. Mm-hmm. They're letting go of it. It may take a while for them to figure that out. But they will keep coming back to release the baggage and let it go. But it's a familiarity. It's a comfortable place. It can be addictive because it's drama sometimes, and you get kind of addicted to that.
Did you talk about the drama? Because there's so many people, we got so many drama kings and queens. It's like you see them coming and you're like, oh my God, what do I do? Here she comes, here he comes. Yet, and there's nothing worse than grown people that keep dragging drama from their, to me. It's like, why do you keep giving these people this kind of power? And what would you suggest to them about releasing that power to these unknown forces, even if they're known? You know, just like your perpetrator, you know, your attacker, you know, you knew who he was, you knew where he came from, and he's probably thinking, well, you just a little kid. I mean, you're not even 3 years old, and he's doing these, you know, horrific things to you, you know, and the fact that you remembered and that you were able to bring this up, talk about it, and talk about it openly now, and get this out. What has that done for you as a human being and for as a social worker?
Well, I can give you an example. I actually went and worked for Child Protective Services in Phoenix for a while, and what it did for me as a social worker in that situation, that was still early on. I was very clear on which clients I could work with and which ones I couldn't. I was very clear with my supervisor that I wasn't ready for that yet. And when I am, I'll let you know. I was working through some of my own issues. So, but I did go, full force and worked with other people that had also been abused. And
I just want to get a clarity. You said to your supervisor as a social worker, you knew who you could work with, so you could not work with small children that had been sexually abused?
For a period of time, mm-hmm. but it was, I was on a healing path.
Okay.
And I was already on that path. So as soon as I was able, then I did. Mm-hmm. But I didn't try to fake it.
Mm-hmm.
And, sometimes when I was taking counseling classes, and I would see people who were like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to counsel alcoholics. Well, I mean, I could tell you they were an alcoholic themselves.
Wait a minute. So you're not a fan of that phrase, fake it till you make it, huh?
No. No, if you read the book, I'm pretty straightforward.
I did. Yes,
pretty blunt and straightforward. And my whole thing is, take control of your life. Be accountable.
And you take control of your life. And so many people continue to this day give control to other people, other situations, other thoughts. They see you coming in, or they know, your mother said, or whoever you grew up with, your teacher said, you're too dumb. You're not tall enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not this. And you just let that tape recorder play over and over and over in your head.
Right.
How did you turn that off?
Well, the techniques that I've used for that, one is the best bioenergetic synchronization mm-hmm. technique, and also Psyche. Psyche changes your beliefs at the subconscious level. That's what Psyche is.
Is that the psychological kinesiology?
Yes, and that is, really your beliefs are underlying everything. Your mm-hmm. beliefs, dictate your thoughts and your feelings,
mm-hmm.
because it's underneath everything is those beliefs that are rooted in you from the time you're very young. So changing those beliefs, those beliefs are no longer there. Those are cleared out. And then working with the best to clear out those memories and those, it does the same type of thing. It clears out that stuff so that you're not, you basically are no longer that person.
How do you
become a different person?
You really do, especially when you take control of your thoughts. Because I am a friend. When I was reading your book, I was like, oh, this is a girlfriend after my own heart. We are kindred spirits, I'm telling you. And
that's wonderful.
And I was looking at your picture, and I'm like, it's a good thing she's pretty, because she will cut your neck off. Because you're like me. You don't want to be in that whiner state. And so many people just want to whine and complain, but they don't want to take the steps. They don't want to go through the process that it's going to take to change their situation. They want to complain about it, but they don't want to do anything about it. Oh my goodness, we got to take a break. When we come back from the break, on the phone with me is Susan Gowdy. She is a master at social work. She also works in K, that's short for psychological kinesiology, and she believes in the best practice, bioenergetic synchronization technique. These are issues, these are steps and techniques that you can work with to heal physically as well as understand and heal from your deep-rooted emotional issues. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to know, what would you tell people? First, they got to get the book. The Journey from Fear to Love is shorter than you think, because everybody thinks it's this long, big, drawn out, oh my God, it's going to take the rest of my life. When you talk about it, you can change it just like that. We'll be back after these messages. Don't say no cuss words, I can hear everything.
Lifestyles, I'm Bobby Owens. Type 2 diabetes is more likely to affect minority populations, including African Americans and Latinos. Mother Love, TV personality and author, has type 2 diabetes and knows firsthand how to deal with it.
To manage diabetes successfully, you must keep a positive attitude and build a strong support team. Make sure you monitor your blood glucose levels often, exercise daily, eat well, and stay informed.
Mother Love says a healthy and balanced diet is very important.
You don't have to skip out on the barbecues, but you do need to watch what you eat. Choose healthy and fresh foods like seasonal fruits and vegetables, lean proteins, and always practice portion control. For snacks, try Glucerna Nutrition Products. The great-tasting shakes, snack bars, and cereals are formulated to minimize blood sugar spikes when used as a part of a diabetes management plan.
Use Glucerna products under medical supervision. For more information, visit Glucerna.com. That's Lifestyles from the makers of Glucerna. I'm Bobby Owens.
Attention, parents and grandparents. Help your children be successful in mathematics. Help guarantee your child's success in math by playing Math Maze, a new card game that helps make a positive change in how your child views their ability to learn and use math. Order your today. Call 310-697-3177 or go to mathmaze.us. Do it now. mathmaze.us.
Big fun. Fun for you and everyone. Play it each and every day. Master Math the easy way.
Allstate would like you to meet Mike and Jamie Erickson.
Yeah, when I retire 18, 20 years from now, I'm going to have kids in college. It's scary because the question is, have we saved enough to be able to afford a comfortable retirement and see the kids through college and also through, you know, their later years in life?
Mike's going to be 51 next year. Jamie will be 44. And their youngest will be 4.
Reality is that we've got a lot of money that we're going to have to pay out over the rest of our lives, but it's the long-term retirement for Jamie and I that I worry about. I think we're going to be able to have enough money to raise our kids, but beyond that is a concern.
For Mike and Jamie, and thousands with stories like theirs, there's Allstate Retirement. It's free one-on-one help, planning for the third half of your life. Whatever you have, wherever you are, Allstate can work with that.
Start the conversation today with Altadena, California Allstate agent Wilbert Smith Insurance Services. Call 626-791-7636. Allstate Indemnity Company, Northbrook, Illinois.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Mother Love Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back. On the phone with me is Susan Gowdy. She is a master social worker. She's also has a master's degree in social work from Arizona State University with a strong background in psychology, counseling, and social work, as well as certifications in neurophysical reprogramming. That's NPR, bioenergetic synchronization technique, and psychological kinesiology, Psych-K. Before the break, I was asking about, we were talking about the techniques and why people are just, why do they just get stuck? You know, I know they feel comfortable in that. How do you get them out of that to get to the place of understanding that you can take the journey from fear to love? Because when you think about going from fear to love, and that's really what it's about, how much we love, and everybody always thinks it's loving somebody else, it's loving our husbands, loving our children, loving our significant others, our church, our synagogue, our temples, our co-workers, and especially women, they forget completely about loving them, loving themselves. Talk about how important it is to love yourself and how you got to that place and how you stayed out of victimhood.
Well, I started using the two techniques best with the first one, but I also just started paying more attention and decided that I wanted to live a conscious life. And I think what happens a lot is you end up with physical illnesses or just not feeling well physically. I mean, that typically goes along with, you know, somebody who's got a lot of drama in their life or is a negative person or downer. Also, some of the things that help is when friends stop listening to you and they don't want to hear it anymore. When they stop listening and you start, you know, having less and less people around to do that for you, then you start to go within and decide, you know, I want to figure this out. I want to have a happy life. I want to feel well. And again, with these techniques, you physically start feeling well. Then you know, the emotional starts to come along with that. And after a while, you realize, you know, I feel really good. I'm happy. I'm in a totally different place than I was before. And once you do that, you never want to go back. You never want to go back to where you were before. So, I give some techniques for people to use that are pretty basic that I use myself at home. Because we are human. We were spiritual, I believe, first.
Mm-hmm.
And we're living here as humans, and mm-hmm. the spirit is still within us.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't lost that. But as humans and living in this world, we have things that come up against us that we have to deal with. So I use a technique. It's a mirror technique is what I would call it. I will go up in my bathroom where I have lots of mirrors. It's a safe place. It's my private space. My children leave me alone.
And they're like, Mom in the bathroom again. Mom in the bathroom with the mirrors again. Mom, that's where everybody go downstairs.
Mom's in the bathroom she's losing it. She's in there losing it. But literally, if things get to be, I'm spiraling down, 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 and I can't get myself out, which doesn't happen very often anymore because I feel good and I don't want to feel bad. I don't like that. So I quickly get myself back up. But the mirror technique, you go in and you see yourself and you hear yourself and all of it in its ugliness, and you go off and you go do your thing. And when you're looking in the mirror and see that face that you're making and you hear the sound, it echoes more in the bathroom, that stops me. I don't like the way it looks. I don't like the way it looks. And that will stop me instantly and get me to start doing self-talk to bring myself back up to where I'm in appreciation and feeling good about it.
I love what you said, that you do the self-talk, because that's a positive self-talk. And before the break, I was asking because, so many people talk themselves out of goodness. They talk themselves out of what they really, really want. They're almost afraid to say, well, this is what I want, and this is what I want to do with my life, and this is how I want to feel, but somebody else is going to, my mother's going to think, my husband's going to think, my kids, my boss. So shut up. What do you think? I remember I did the mirror technique too. I lost a lot of weight. I used to be a really, really heavy woman, and I remember going into my room, and I got this full length mirror, and I took off all my clothes, and I looked at myself buck naked in the mirror, and after I picked myself up off the floor laughing, I was hysterical. You know it's bad when you crack your own self up. And I thought about all the things I like about my fat, out of shape brown body. And I went from head to toe, and I've all the critical things, and then I went and did all the cool things. I'm like, I'm going to stay on the cool side of what's cool about me. And talk about the importance of having that self-talk and the positive talk, because people have control over that, and they don't realize that they have control. So many people don't realize that they are wonderful. Talk about that, because that's in your book. Talk about the importance of that.
Well, the bottom line for me is that it starts with loving yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't love yourself first, you can't love anyone else. You can't be a good friend, a good parent, a good mother, any of those things. It's basically, I see love, self-love, mm-hmm. as the foundation that you build everything else, build the life that you really want on that foundation. And if you don't have that self-love as your foundation, then everything else you try to build in your life will eventually crumble.
Mm-hmm.
So when you realize that self-love is so important, that's when you start to practice it without any effort at all. It's easy.
You know, we're saying that, and I know that there are so many people that are listening and will listen to this program on a download, and they're going to go, you say it's easy, Susan? How is that easy to get past my father raped me and my mother knew it and she did nothing about it? How do I get past that I'm the product of a gang rape? How do I get past that I was ridiculed all the time? How do I get past every idea I came to my job with, they shot it down? How do I get past that? Talk to people about how they can take that fear down and get on this journey from fear to love.
That's when I think that they may need to find a technique similar to BEST or Psyche, mm-hmm. or the neurophysical reprogramming,
mm-hmm.
any of those techniques, because they're easy and they will go in and help you to find what's at the subconscious level that's holding you back and keeping you from doing that. Sometimes you need a little extra help. I did. I was abused, so I needed a little extra help to get myself over that edge, mm-hmm. to where I then took control. And so that's helpful. Sometimes counseling will help. Yeah. I like the hands-on healing techniques a little bit better because there's not a lot of talking involved.
I was going to say, because in your book you go, counseling, yeah, okay, but why you need to, you know. You were kind of like real iffy on the counseling, you know, sitting down telling somebody, because, you know, it seems to me that you're more in tune with the hands-on. Let's sit down. Let's get you in control as opposed to the counselor being in control. Let's get...
Yeah, I want to empower the... Mm-hmm. I want the client to be empowered. Mm-hmm. And these techniques, the facilitator just facilitates. The client does the work. Mm-hmm. They take the credit for it so that they're able to clear stuff out. And it's so easy on them. There's no stress involved. You don't have to go back and recount everything that ever happened in your life. And, you know, even when I did counseling, I let people come in and I gave them that first session, and they could tell me everything, you know, blame it on mom and dad and on their siblings, on their teachers, on whoever they wanted to. But I told them from the very beginning, this is it. One session. And I was working with adults. So it was one session. They weren't living at home with parents anymore. Mm-hmm. And then when they came back in, I said, we're going to start here, mm-hmm. where you are now today, and we're going to move forward because all of that stuff doesn't apply anymore. Yeah. So taking control in that way, realizing that you're in being present and focused in the moment, that makes you realize, oh, I'm not there anymore. Mom's not saying those things to anymore, mm-hmm. To me anymore. Dad's not saying that to me. My brothers aren't picking on me. I am actually an adult, and I have power and control, and I can take that in my life. But by being present and focused in the moment, that helps a whole lot. Practicing that in your daily life. So if you're doing dishes, you're doing dishes. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking about your finances and stressful things that are going on in your kids and all these things you have to take care of. You're just doing what you're doing in the moment.
When you talk about the conscious life, living in that moment, being present right there, I'm that kind of person. That's why I was so taken with the book, because I'm like, okay, this is what I'm doing like right now. I don't have time to be thinking about what happened yesterday, what's going to happen 25 minutes from now. Let me do this now so I can give this my complete undivided attention. And I have been oftentimes accused and been ridiculed about, oh, Mother Love, you just being naive. You just like a little kid. You just always look at the happy part. You always look at the joyful part. Crap is falling down around you. You know, and the whole, everything is going all haywire and it's all cattywampus and you got a smile on your face and you just living like right here. And I've been accused of being so naive about that. And I just don't believe that I'm naive. I'm like, I'm not stupid. I mean, I know crap is going to happen. You know, but I'll be ready when that crap happens. But I want to live like right now. There was a song, I can't even remember who made the song. It was like, it's called With a Child's Heart. Go with a child's heart and face the worries of the day. And when you look at little kids don't worry about nothing. We put all that crap into them. Talk to us about how we cannot and how we should not and ought not do that to our children so they'll become crazy drama queen and kings like we done turned into and have to do all of this. Is there a way that we can teach these techniques even and make them applicable to young children so that they're not going through this crazy time when they get 30, 40, 50 years old?
Absolutely. I have four children, and I think that how they learned by watching me, mm-hmm. and what I was doing. Mm-hmm. That's how your children are going to learn. They're going to pattern after you and mm-hmm. look at what you're doing. And they've seen me in situations where I didn't go down that path toward fear. Mm-hmm. I headed in the direction toward love. My husband lived away from us for 3 years in Seattle, and I was here along with my children. Mm-hmm. They watched me in that situation, and they saw that part of what I did with that was I had many, many friends who wanted to drag me down and tell me how awful that situation was, and you need to do this, and you need to do that, and this is what, and I honestly stopped talking to those people. Because that wasn't helping.
They're the dream killers. They're in the group. Look, I'm miserable. You should be miserable too. How dare you be happy because your husband is gone? You supposed to fall down and be and fall apart like we are, Susan. You're making us look bad because you're happy. Did you?
Yeah, that's That's exactly right, and that's what they'll try to do, and they try to suck it out of you, suck the life out of you, and get you to join them. They want you to join them, and those are the people that, when they start doing that, those are the ones you want to turn and walk the other way.
Quickly.
You definitely don't want to.
You want to walk away quickly. Quickly.
Yes, run.
so now we're talking about a conscious life, and the fact that so many people live in such fear, and they're afraid to live in love. What do you think, in your opinion, is our biggest fear?
I think our biggest fear is our own power, the power that we hold within ourselves. That's our biggest fear. And I know, I can tell you, I remember when I realized I held that power within myself, and it scared me. At first, I was very excited. I was elated. I felt wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then the second thought was, oh, crap, that means I can't blame my husband. I can't blame my children, my mom, my dad. I'm 100% accountable. But the first thought was how freeing that was, mm-hmm. that I had this power to create the life that I wanted, whatever kind of life I wanted. Maya Angelou talks about that our life is like a canvas. She says, I believe in living a poetic life, an artful life. Mm-hmm. Everything we do is a part of our larger canvas that we are creating. And that's the beauty of life, is it is a canvas, but you can always wipe that clean whenever you want, and you can start over. You can recreate anything you've created that you don't like. So I think that is the biggest fear that we have, is our own power. Dr. Emoto is the author of Hidden Messages in Water, mm-hmm. and he tells
wait,
us
wait, that what's the title of it? Hidden Messages in Water?
Yes.
Oh, I gotta read it. I love the title.
Yeah, it's a wonderful little book, and it's a short book, easy read, but mm-hmm. it's very powerful. Mm-hmm. And he says that humans vibrate at 570 trillion times per second, which is incredibly powerful. And we have potential, phenomenal potential, but most of us don't give ourselves that kind of a credit.
Oh, not at all.
And we don't realize that we have that kind of power, but my belief is that like I said before, we're spiritual first, and I believe that we aren't separate from God, that God is a part of us, and I also believe that God is love. So if God is love, you know, how can we not love ourselves?
How can you not love yourself? And so many people have been unfortunately programmed to believe from whatever the outside forces, you know, family, you know, parents, siblings, friends, the media, all these outside forces are saying you have to be this, you have to look like this, you have to be tall, you have to be slim, you have to look like this, your hair has to look like this. And see, I was all jacked up. I was tore up from the floor up from a little girl because I was like, I am fabulous. And people need to know how fabulous I am. And they used to tell my mother I had deep psychological issues because they would say, oh, she thinks she's better than everybody else. No, I am not better than another human being. What I am, though, is smarter than a lot of people because, like you, I see my power. And I saw it as a little girl what my power was, just like you saw it as a little girl what your power was, and you did not allow anybody to squelch that. What would you say? What would be some of your pearls of wisdom? And I would say to people, you know, if you're going through this, if you're in this state of fear, and you know what, people know what I think about fear. Fear, you know what fear stands for, right?
Yes.
And so for those of you who
false
don't,
but it's
appearing real, false evidence, it's false, it's fake, it's fictitious, it's appearing real. That's because you want to make it real, because that's what you want to have, hold on to it. And I was reading this, and I'm paraphrasing, but you got to give people a reason to understand why it is more important to get off of where you stuck at to get to where you want to be, and why you don't need to be where you stuck at to get to where you want to be. Talk to people and tell them what would be your three things that you would say to a person who is stuck in this fearful mode.
Well, I think I'd want to know if they have any idea why they're stuck in the fearful mode, if they have any conscious idea of where it's coming from, and maybe find out more about that, because if they can participate more and they understand, I mean, educating people is really important. If they can have an understanding of where it's coming from, they're more likely to do something about it. Okay. So I think that's the first step.
Okay. Let's expound on that. When you talk about where it's coming from, because one of the techniques talks about deep-rooted emotions. I mean, things that we've pressed down so far, you know, your father leaving, you know, your mother abandoning you, you know, a rape, you know, whatever the case is, you know, your baby was taken away from you. I had a relative, she was seven, and this was way back in the day when 17-year-olds, it was like, oh, you don't have a baby. And she had the baby, and she wanted to care for her baby. And I remember her family took her baby away from her and gave her baby to an older couple. And she was never allowed to see her child. And I saw the destruction and the devastation that she went through. And as she went on to get married and have other children, it was just never that close. And she was, and I asked her one time, I said, why are you so afraid to get close to your kids? She goes, because if I get too close to them, if I love them too much, somebody's going to come and take them away from me. You talk about deep rooted. How do you get to people in that deep rootedness to even want to see, to start to peel those layers away of, you know, I've held on to this for so long. And sometimes it's like 20, 30, 40 years to get to that.
Unfortunately, sometimes you can't get them to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, some people choose not to do that. And that's something that, I mean, I've been very clear with my kids as I'm raising them, mm-hmm. that they have choices. Mm-hmm. And so they, I mean, they've benefited from that. They've been lucky to have someone who says, you have choices, and you can do this or that, or you can stay there, or you can feel this way, or you can look at it this way. But some people, you know, it will take a crisis mm-hmm. before they finally decide, I got sick and didn't want to be sick anymore, and that's what brought me out of it. Mm-hmm. You were uncomfortable, not feeling well about yourself, and mm-hmm. that's what brought you out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have, and so like a crisis isn't necessarily a bad thing. I consider the crisis, the trauma of when I was a child, as my Tigger bounce. It bounced mm-hmm. me right to where I am today. So
I get the Tigger bounce.
Yeah. I mean, we can try, and as a counselor, that's kind of what you do. You try to get them to do, because you know, mm-hmm. you're sitting there going, I know what the problem is. Why can't you just figure this out and move on and get over this? Mm-hmm. Well, it's not your life. It's their journey. They have to make this journey. They have to make the choices and decide what they want to do. There's lots of things that are available to them. And like I said, you can bring someone in and work with them on any of these techniques. And I don't care what technique you use. If it resonates with you, mm-hmm. that's the technique you should use. Mm-hmm. But somebody could come in and do a technique and clear stuff out, freak out, oh no, you know, feel like a whole lot better, but feel so uncomfortable with who they are now, they never return. Or not for a very long time. So you can't make somebody do it.
No,
but
you
most
can't.
People will get to the point where they want to.
Now,
they want to make that change.
And they want to make that change, and you can make that change. Tell me about who you want to read The Journey from Fear to Love. Who is this for, and what do you want people to walk away from after they read the book and they get information about the techniques, about the best technique, about Psych-K, about NPR?
Well, I wrote the book so that anybody could pick it up. It's a really easy read. I think it's funny, but it's straight to the point. I try to use humor. I write it as if it's, you know, you and I are having a cup of coffee and mm-hmm. having a conversation. It's very simple. So I didn't want anyone to feel like they couldn't understand it. And the point is for them to take away from the book is to feel empowered, mm-hmm. to feel that you're entitled to having this wonderful, beautiful life that you want, and that you do have the power to create exactly what you want, and not letting those people that you talked about before telling you're nuts for feeling so good and you're just, you know, you're being flaky, you're not paying attention to what's happening. I want them to understand that your life is your own reality.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality that matters. Nothing else matters except for your own reality and your own life and what you create.
And what you believe and what is in your core. And one of the components in the book that I think is extremely powerful and that a lot of people really don't get, and they push this down, and it's a very short word, they don't believe they're worthy of a good life.
I think you asked me earlier why people stay in that victimhood or stay in that fear place.
Mm-hmm.
What I've found are two common denominators. One is they don't feel worthy, and that's what the best in psyche and all those things will do. Is with them, you're going to start feeling worthy when you start to unload all that baggage. And the other thing is they don't feel worthy, and they also don't have a connection to their source, which I call God.
Oh, no, girl, come on.
They're lacking that connection because we are energy. And if we, that's our source. We just have to plug into it. And as energy beings, you plug into that, and nothing's going to stop you from having exactly what you want in your life and having a beautiful life. How can it stop you when that's love? You just plugged yourself right into the source of love.
And I think so many people, unfortunately, are afraid of love. They don't believe that they're worthy of love. They, you know, think it's gotta look a certain way, smell a certain way, sound a certain way. I remember when my husband and I got married, and all my girlfriends were like, my quote, and I'm using air quotes, they were like, I can't believe her big fat butt got that fine man. How she get that fine man? What? And I was like, oh, man, she got a good man. And I said to them, just point blank, I said, I have a good man because I'm a good woman. And I'm worthy of a good man. And they looked at me like I had just grew another head out the side of my neck.
We're going to be friends.
We are.
That's exactly how I feel. And I had that happen many times when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I would have a nice-looking boyfriend and have friends say, how did she get him? And I said the same thing. I can have a conversation, and I'm worthy. He likes me. That's how I got him.
You better get, and look, you have to tell him, you better get you some business and get on the stick. Tell people how they can get their copy of The Journey from Fear to Love. It's shorter than you think.
They can go to my website, which is journeyfromfeartolove.com, and it's available on Amazon and also on Barnes & Noble. You can get it as an ebook or as a soft cover. Like I said, Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and journeyfromfeartolove.com is my website.
So what's coming up next for Miss Susan?
Well, I'm working on the next book. I don't know if I'm allowed to say what the title is. It's drama, 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 bitch, bitch, bitch.
Okay, Susan, you're not allowed to say that, but since this is our show and we can say what we want, if that's the title, that's the title.
Well, let's call it D3B3.
You are too funny. I cannot wait to chat with you again. You must send me a copy when it comes out. Please know that I just love you. I appreciate you and what you are giving to the world. May the universe continue to open up and conspire for your great success. Ladies and gentlemen, Susan Gowdy. It has been my pleasure.
You.
You are so very, very welcome.
And baby, I appreciate you too.
I appreciate you, babies. And you know I love you, and there's nothing. Look, the producer's standing here. Get off the radio. I love you, babies. Peace.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.